Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 30th, 2016. Once again, welcome to the program. Good afternoon, Al.
I'm out of it.
Well, a little bit of pressure on gold today. And again, hey, we have a three-day weekend. People will say, well, that doesn't mean anything. Well, it does a little bit. But a little bit of pressure on gold today, down 1230 at 1311. Silver was down 27 cents today at 1868. Platinum was down 23 at 1058. Palladium was down 19 at $682. Yeah, platinum and palladium were getting, not even so much platinum, but palladium was getting a little too strong, over 700, and I figured it was due for a pullback, and a pullback happened. USDX today is moving up again, 0.53 at 96.06. Crude oil down 0.51 at 46.47, and the paper markets today, you had the Dow. Come on, Dow. Why is it doesn't do this? You know what? This works perfectly all day long, but just as soon as this program comes on and I go to my market report, beep.
It's Frank's fault.
It's somebody.
Frank, the producer, once again.
No, I'm not gonna blame him.
Well, you could if you wanted to.
Well,
you could if you want. You have that option.
I'm gonna blame those internet gremlins. Dow Jones down 61 points at 18,441. The S&P down 5 at 2175. And the NASDAQ down 12 at 5219. And you have, see, I just clicked it and it came right up as soon as I was finished. 10-year yield, 1.57%. The euro is 111. That really dropped a lot in the past week or so. And you know, overseas markets, Asian and European markets, basically unchanged. Germany was up over 1%.
Okay.
So there.
So the markets are marketing.
Yeah, you know, I came across this one little, you know, we have, there was a report out that I saw, and I know all my listeners are going to see this report, my clients, and talks about the global central banks. They seem to have that they had this really strong demand for gold since 2010, building up enormous amounts of gold. And now there seems to be some signs of a little bit of fatigue from some of these global central banks. And I think you're seeing a little bit of a shift, because we know Venezuela has sold some of their gold to pay some for some of their debt. Gold purchases by global central bankers, this is from the World Gold Council statistics. On a scale of 1 to 10, they might be a 7 or 8, the way I view them. The global central bankers plunged by 40% during the second quarter. But again, this also kind of correlates to what we've seen in the U.S. Mint's report of the amount of product that's been purchased for the last couple of months. The last quarter was actually the weakest pace of gold buying by central banks since 2011. The five-year low for central bank gold purchases was earlier reported by Bloomberg News. I don't think gold is going out of style. I just think these governments, with negative rates, things are not rosy in a lot of these countries. There's a lot of things that are going on, a lot of focus in other areas. There's certainly a lot of turmoil as far as the wars and the military and so forth that are popping up all over the place. But gold prices, we've seen it surge 24% this year. And so you've had a lot of investors that are heading into the gold market. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But at the very last sentence, it talks about they are still sitting on an incredible 32,000 tons of gold, equaling about $1.4 trillion. And this is the biggest amount since 2013. So,
and that's the amount that the central banks are sitting on.
Yes, sir.
Central banks.
Central
I'm talking
banks.
About, all right, and conventional private banks are going to be sitting on some more on top of that. I don't know how it would compare in terms of whether they have more or less than central banks.
This is central banks.
I don't know.
You can see with what's going on. I mean, with the Brexit and things that are going with China having problems. You can see them maybe refocusing some of their funds in different areas and so forth. But they're still holding an awful lot, $1.4 trillion. So
yeah, we got another article here from Zero Hedge that indicates a certain amount of its. You could interpret it as refocusing your investments also. The headline is, "I've never seen anything like this before." That's a quote out of the article. "The housing markets in the Hamptons, Aspen, and Miami are all crashing." They mean the upscale housing markets. I don't know if there are any downscale markets, certainly in the Hamptons or Aspen. There might be some in Miami, but they mean the upscale. They're talking about homes $10 million or more, at least in Aspen. Earlier this month, we reported that sales of luxury homes in the Hamptons plunged by half, and home prices fell sharply in the second quarter in the ultra-wealthy enclave, New York's favorite weekend haunt for the 1%ers. Reuters blamed this on stock market jitters. There's also offshore money laundering, slowing global economy, collapse of the petrodollar, drastic drop in Wall Street bonuses. In short, a sudden loss of confidence. But a greater fool may emerge just around the corner, which in turn has frozen buyer interest. And what they mean by greater fool, the people in the Hamptons, you own a home that's worth $10 million. Now, truth of the matter is, it may not really be worth $10 million as compared to how many homes you can buy for $500,000 out in the real world. But you can pay $10 million for a home in the Hamptons, or $20 or $50 or $500 million for all I know. I mean, I have no idea what the most expensive home is in the Hamptons. You can pay a lot. But for most people, they're paying these exorbitant amounts because they're betting that if I pay $10 million, there's some other idiot out there who's willing to pay me $11 million or $12 million for that house. I can make some money off that house. Meaning that the wealthy people have bought these extremely high-priced homes as speculation. All right. Betting that there's another idiot out there. Yeah, I paid $10 million for a three-bedroom house, which I could buy in another location for, who knows, $500,000 or $250,000. But I can sell this for $12 million or $15 million. I can get rich. Well, maybe if they've run out of greater fools and there's no one who's going to pay you $12 million for the house you paid $10 million for, maybe it's time to cut the price on that $10 million house, and that's what seems to be happening. The article continues. It says several weeks later, a similar collapse, similar to the Hamptons, in the luxury housing segment was reported in the Denver Post as high-end sales that fuel Aspen's $2 billion a year real estate market are evaporating, pushing Pitkin County, that's where Aspen's located in Colorado, Pitkin County, pushing Pitkin County sales volume down more than 42%. 42%. To $546 million in the first half of the year from $940 million, same period in 2015. That's a big decline. Like the Hamptons, the question everyone is asking is why. There are many answers: uncertainty around the presidential election, fear of Trump, fear of Clinton, growing trade imbalance with China, Brexit, roller coaster oil prices, Zika, wobbling economies in South America. The list goes on. People are worried about all kinds of stuff these days, says Aspen broker Bob Ritchie. I've never seen anything like this before. The speed of the collapse has been stunning. Single-family home sales in Aspen are down 62% in dollar volume through the first half of the year. Sales of homes priced $10 million or more, almost always paid for in cash, are down 60%. Who's been buying these $10 million homes with cash?
China.
Well, it might be. It may be, but it might be China. It might be drug dealers, but it might be Hillary and Bill. And just in case she doesn't win the election, maybe she may go skiing or something. But $10 million in cash, that's pretty interesting. But down 62%. High-end buyers have disappeared. Aspen has never experienced such a sudden and precipitous drop in real estate prices. Worse, it's not just a collapse in the number of transactions, even more disconcerting for brokers who've always trumpeted Aspen as a safe and lucrative place to park a huge pile of money. Prices are dropping. And that's what's interesting about this from my perspective. This article doesn't simply mean that it's true that buyers are broke or otherwise unwilling to buy. It also means that seemingly rich sellers are kind of broke and willing to sell at significant discounts, all of which suggests that these real estate markets, the article mentions the Hamptons, Miami, and Aspen, but the article didn't really don't have anything here about Miami, but the same point it carries through, all of which suggests that these luxury real estate markets were mostly speculative bubbles, right? I paid $10 million for that house, but I'm sure I can find some moron to pay $12 million, all right? That's speculation, that's greed, and it appears that's a foundation for speculative bubbles, because if you do find that guy who's dumb enough to pay $12 million for your $10 million house, he's betting he can find some moron who'll pay $15 million. But it appears that we have run out of greater fools, and therefore these speculative bubbles have popped. Now, what I'm interested in, among other things, is if the super rich, at least some of them, are suddenly selling their homes for less or not buying homes in these luxury locations. Does this actually signal something about, are the rich people running out of money? Are they getting smart? Are we running out of greater fools? What is happening here? And does this have anything to do with what you were talking about when you said that the amount of gold that was sold in the last several months has been surprisingly low? Is this evidence of the same phenomena, or is this something else? Or are we just looking at coincidence?
Well, I think a lot of these million-dollar homes are not worth what they're selling them for.
Of course not. That's the point.
So, maybe they're a little bit. Maybe the buyers have become a little more smarter, and the prices will fall. However, it was just a couple of weeks ago, that we reported on the luxury condominiums were dropping. That they're mm-hmm. empty buildings because they can't sell these luxury apartments and condominiums. So. They're just sitting vacant. So yeah, I mean, people are becoming a little more, fancy to what they're spending on their homes. Whether you have $10 million or whether you have $150,000, you don't want to buy something that's, way overpriced because it's,
What does that indicate for the stock markets?
Well, I know
What does that indicate for stock markets? The people that are unwilling to buy a $10 million home for $12 million or whatever, if they're becoming prudent in the way they spend their money, what does it bode for the stock markets? Are they also going to start being more sensible, more inhibited when it comes to buying stocks? Will the stock market start to slow?
No, they make their money off of the people who buy stocks. So, no, I mean, you're looking at 1% of the
population. No, but I mean, wealthy people buy stocks.
You're looking at the 1%ers, so... but I think, again, it's just perhaps they're not owning multiple homes. But I don't have, $20 million, so I can't tell you the mindset. Maybe we should ask Mr. Trump.
You could write an IOU, maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah. But, something that's interesting when we talk about the economy and retail and everything, we talk about student debt, the $1.2 trillion in student debts. Well, on an annual basis, the annual student debt payments, they've reached about $160 billion in the U.S. That's annual student debt payments. I saw a stat last week that 1 in 6 people in the U.S. have a student debt loan and a student loan. I thought, seems like an awful lot of people. 1 in 6.
I didn't know there are that many educated people in this country. 1 in 6.
Like, what are they taking? Craps. But anyway, this is a lot of money that's going into these debt payments.
That's what's being paid. The total debt is in the neighborhood of $1.2 trillion.
That's what I said. This is what they're paying on an annual basis. And that's more than the yearly revenue of Amazon, of Home Depot, and a lot of other major retailers. So again, it's $160 billion that's not going into the U.S. economy, that people are not out there buying sweaters and pants and so forth. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, it is. I think it's also interesting. $160 billion, I don't know what that is divided by. I'm trying to figure it out right now. 1.2 million.
I don't think the listeners want to hear you calculate.
Well, it's easier to keep track of it. All right. Equals. They're paying them. It means it implies. No, it doesn't. Never mind. And do like the church lady. Never mind.
And it implies that you have $160 billion that's not going into the economy.
Yeah.
And that's 1 out of 6 people. So, again, and the reason I brought that up was because, you have consumer sentiment and then you have consumer confidence. And, of course, both of these terms are used to refer to, a degree of confidence the consumers feel about the overall economy. Well, today, the consumer confidence, last week we talked about the Michigan consumer sentiment. Today, the consumer confidence index came out, and that was very, very high. It's one of the highest. It's like, well, how do these two have such a difference? We talked yesterday about how different reports just conflict with one another, and here's another one, and they're measured in different ways, but you would think that they would have a common reference point, that they would be more common to one another or closer to one another instead of such a wide degree of range. So again, it's something in the economy. It just doesn't make sense. The numbers aren't right, And it's just like everything else that we see with numbers that are produced by the government and various government departments, that one and one is not equaling two.
Well, sometimes it's new math, and it's not important whether you get the answer correct.
It's just, whether people
it's just
believe
important
it.
That you feel good about yourself when you get done with the calculation.
Okay.
All right. You know, one of the points behind this, if the numbers don't match, it's not only evidence that the system is not under control. It may be evidence that the system can't be under control. There's too many things going on. Nobody can keep track of all the numbers from California to New York, and there's constant conflicts. Maybe control, real control, is not possible. Let's take a break for some commercials, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. You know, we were talking a little bit about student debt in the previous segment and how much that is and whatever. Here's an article from MarketWatch. It says, the headline is, this is the number one financial regret of older Americans. Most Americans are filled with regrets, financial regrets. Fully 3 in 4, in fact, admit that they harbor financial regrets. It's according to a survey of more than 1,000 adults by Bankrate.com. The biggest regret, not saving for retirement early enough. Nearly 1 in 5 Americans put this in the number one spot. What's more, among those 65 and up, 27% says this was their biggest regret, compared with 17% of those aged 30 to 49. And the idea behind this, you don't appreciate it when you're young, You can't imagine. I mean, there'll be mass extinction events, and the Earth will tilt on its axis, and a bunch of things will happen before you ever get to be 70. But surprise, surprise, all those things aren't going to happen. You are going to get to be 70. You're going to want to retire, and you're going to want some money. And early on, you don't think about it, and you don't recognize how much difference it makes if you start saving early. Thanks to compound interest, the amount of money that you've saved, it can turn into something substantial. At least it could back when we had reasonable rates of return on our investment. The last 7-8 years, we've had near zero interest rate returns, which means a lot of this thinking is no longer valid. Nevertheless, biggest regret, not starting to save early enough. Didn't start until late in life. The first one is not saving for retirement early enough, 18%. Not saving for emergency expenses, there are 13% said we didn't save enough for emergencies. Taking on too much student loan, that's what you were talking about, Melody, that's 9% of the people surveyed. They said, oh my God, you know, what did I take on all that loan for? Taking on too much credit card debt, 9%. Not saving for your children's education, 8%. Buying a bigger house than you could afford, 3%. That would be something that would resonate with the people in Miami, the Hamptons, and Aspen right now. Saying, what did I pay? I must have been crazy to pay $10 million for that check. But I think the lesson in this, the common denominator, people are concerned they didn't save enough on the one hand, and they went too deeply into debt on the other. And, you know, that's an old-time lesson. Everyone kind of knows about it. But we want to play the big shot. So we go out with some people and we put the dinner, the drinks, whatever, on our credit card. And you get to play the big shot. And everybody sees you and, we're all very impressed that you're buying the whole thing. But next month, when nobody can see you and you're eating out of a soup can or something like that because you're so broke from all the money you spent, you wasted with your credit card when you're playing the big shot, they don't see you when the reality comes in and you have to actually pay the bills, tighten your belt. And you're no longer the big shot. You are the guy who's a couple of steps above being homeless. Well, we succumb to that temptation, where we try to play the big shot and we buy things right now on credit that really we probably don't absolutely need and probably we can't truly afford, but we lack the impulse control that's required to say, no, I don't need that. Yes, I'd like to have one. Yeah, it's a beauty. Maybe even it's a good deal, but I don't need that. People get older, they say, you know, we spent a lot of money on things we didn't really need, and we didn't save money, and now we're going to have a problem. And the lesson here for all of us is you got to save, you got to save, you got to save. First order of business. Don't spend it on every idiotic thing. Got to save.
Yeah, but you know what, Al? I can remember my grandparents. I mean, they retired on very little.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't. I mean, people, you know, when you're 20s and you're 30s, you have families. You have children, you do have to put them through school, and there is being, you know, and it has changed to the point where you got to make sure you have the right tags on your clothing and everything else, which is totally ridiculous, but nevertheless, this is the society, this is how it's changed, and those things became important, to a lot of people. But whether that's important or not, when you think about what you have to save, we're talking for retirement. You talk to a financial advisor, they tell you $1 million is what you need to retire.
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? But yet, this is all due to our fee. And I don't want to go back and hag on and say, oh my gosh, they're going to talk about fiat currency and, you know, and all this. But that's what it stems from.
Yeah,
our
that
money,
and high rising taxes.
Forget the taxes. We're talking about our currency that has lost value. We're talking about it takes more and more of those dollars to buy the things that we need. There's no way that it should cost $1 million for a person to retire. So it's almost impossible in today's world, in the wages that we earn, that for a lot of people to save $1 million so they can retire.
No, I understand. It's virtual impossibility. Some of it's just laughable.
100,000 is probably difficult for the majority of the population
to actually save. This article continues. It says,
and the more you do save, and if you are fortunate enough to make and able to save that amount, then yes, taxes will take a lot of that.
Taxes take a lot of your income in the first place, and they don't leave you enough to save.
And they're not going.
And you're not saving it in a tangible form that will resist the forces of inflation like gold or silver will, but you save it in fiat dollars.
20 years ago, I can remember people saying, well, I need my IRA because it helps me in my taxes. This is 20 plus years ago. Really, do you really believe your taxes are going to go down? I don't care how old you are. So, no, taxes are not going to go down.
There may be some small advantage, but they'll
get you one way or another.
I understand that. They're going to take $100 from you, and they're going to give you $5 back, and you're going to say, golly, I got $5 back from the IRS. Yeah, but they took a $95 from you.
Isn't funny. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it kind of is. Anyways, this article, it does continue. It says, according to 2015 data from the Employee Benefit Research Institute, only 28% of workers say they have fully 28% of workers say they have less than $1,000 saved. And 17% have between $1,000 and $999, less than 10 grand, which means 35-45% of the people have less than $10,000 in savings. Meanwhile, just 14% of workers have $250,000 or more saved, and they don't say so here, but I'm guessing that $250,000 that 14% have saved includes the equity in their homes. I didn't say that's true or false, but that's my guess. And they conclude saying, that's far too little, according to many financial advisors. Guidelines from Fidelity, for example, state that by the age of 30, you should have your entire salary saved, meaning if you're making $30,000 a year, you should have $30,000 saved by the age of 30. And by 40, you should have three times your salary. So if you're making $45,000, $50,000 a year, by 40, you should have $150,000 saved. And by 50, six times your salary saved. All right. This is just laughable to me. This is like saying you should get some pixie dust in order to take your next vacation. Get some pixie dust from Tinkerbell, and then you'll be able to fly to the Bahamas on your own. You won't need an airplane. Save airfare. I mean, how many people in this country can save six times their annual salary? All right? I mean, this is just, come on. Come on, it's evidence. You read this thing, and it's evidence that we have created some kind of a society where right now savings are difficult and almost impossible. And it's part of the reason, again, we do advocate that you buy gold or silver.
And these financial planners,
if you save in that form, it'll stand up. If you don't, if you're going to save in the paper, you're going to likely get clobbered.
And these financial planners, why do they want you to save so much too? And because they want to trade you. But anyway, but yeah, gold and silver will protect your purchasing power through all these times when all your little paper investments. And a very wise man told me one time that in your 50s, most people will make most of their money in their 50s. So
they'll make their best. Yeah, they'll make
because you've become, you become knowledgeable in whatever your job,
you've got
your
some kind
experience,
of a superior position. You're supervising one way or another. Yeah.
So,
and then after that, then you get to be 60, Melody.
And
then they say, get him out of here. Get him out of here.
Then you become old.
Mm-hmm. And no longer relevant. So.
Well, I hope the listeners are enjoying this program as much as we are today. So what's next, Al?
I got one from – here's one from 24/7 Wall Street. It says Ford offers 72%, 0% financing as car loan defaults surge. All right. Now, this is another one of these leaves in the breeze where you sit back and say, this is not good. Ford Motor Company offers a 0% percentage rate for 6 years at 72 months across its entire model line, presumably to clear out 2016 models. That's the presumption. They're just, well, we just got too many 2016 models on hand, so we're going to give you 0% financing for 6 years. Pay off this car. I mean, if it's 0%, if it's really 0% financing, that's kind of a giveaway. They're kind of giving away the vehicles. And presumably to they're buying business is what they're doing. The deals come at a time when car finance defaults, blamed to some extent on long loan repayment programs, have skyrocketed. People are defaulting. The number of defaults on car vehicles, automobile vehicles, is rising dramatically. The Ford Freedom sales event requires buyers to use Ford Credit APR financing. Ford Credit is part of Ford. That means that Ford takes on either the benefit or problems with the loans. This is interesting. The corporation is lending you money to buy its products. That's the implication here. Ford is using Ford's money to get you a car or a truck. Now, you look at that and think about it and roll around the back of your mind a little bit and you say, you know, Ford must be desperate to make some sales. They must be running into, it implies that they're running into situations something like Melody described relative to the sale of gold and silver from the U.S. Mint. Sales, this is not evidence that sales are running hot in this country. Same thing with the Hamptons, Miami, and Aspen, luxury homes. There is a decline here. To put the loans in perspective, they will be paid through 2022. All right, buy a car now, you'll be paying for it for the next 6 years. Don't be fooled into thinking depreciation slows much after the first year. In fact, new cars continue to lose value for four or more years, averaging a decline of 15 to 25% per year. On average, a new car will lose 60% of its value over the first 5 years of its life. I don't even believe that's accurate. I think it's more than that, but 60%. The point being, this is like the underwater mortgages we had with during the onset of the Great Recession. People owed more on their homes than the homes were worth, and so they said, I'm out of here. They abandoned the homes. The cars, what they're telling us here is the value of the car will depreciate so much in the first 5 years of the car's life, and you got another year anyway on the mortgage, on the car payment. You're going to be paying on this car payment more money than the car is technically worth. And that means there will be people who will be abandoning their vehicles. Right, they'll just park them. I'm out of here. I can't deal with it anymore. They don't say that most of the people who have these extended loans are in the subprime category, but they say some are. Rising delinquencies come as a warning sign that more loans may end up in default down the road. What may be most troubling, however, is that the default rate is already climbing up to 12.3% in January of this year from 11.3% the prior month. This is the highest rate since 2010. Securities backed by auto loans. Now, this just makes me, it just makes me want to giggle a little bit. They did the same thing with house mortgages. They bundled all these subprime mortgages, mixed them up, sliced and diced them, and used them to back, they were mortgage-backed bonds. And it blew up in everybody's face because once they started to default on those subprime mortgages, the bonds became worthless or if not worth nothing, they were worth much less than they had been previously. And here they are doing it again. They're doing it again. They used to have subprime mortgage loans. They've had subprime auto loans. And they've been using the auto loans to issue bonds that would create the appearance of capital that could be used as a basis for making loans. If the banks would buy the bonds, they could use it on a fractional reserve banking to lend more money to the consumers. This was going to stimulate the economy, and it's all just nonsense. Securities backed by auto loans are structured to absorb a portion of anticipated defaults. All right? But concerns have mounted over the last year that the cumulative losses on auto loan securitizations may end up exceeding initial estimates, thanks to declining underwriting standards. Oh, this is all just a bunch of crapola. They all it says is they're getting caught. They set up a Ponzi scheme, and they based the Ponzi scheme what they called initial estimates. They hired some guy with a PhD or an MBA to come in and estimate something, and they said, well, our professionals estimate that such and such will be true in 4 years or 5 years or 10 years. And it was all nonsense. It was not a real estimate. It was a device intended to sell a product. All right? And that's what they did. And they sold the product, and now they're saying, the cumulative losses may exceed initial estimates. Cumulative losses were always going to exceed the initial estimates. The initial estimates were no more valid and trustworthy than the numbers you get from the Federal Reserve or the government of the United States in terms of unemployment, inflation, whatever. So this is Ford is in trouble, right? It's using its own money. It's lending money to people to buy Ford cars and trucks.
Yeah, but Al, this
and it's not charging any interest on it.
Yeah, but Al, this isn't new. I mean, you had GM do it big time prior to 2008. They did it for years, but it was absolutely. I mean, you can. It's just not Ford. You see a lot of the cars.
No, I'm sure it's not. That's part of my point.
Manufacturers.
That's part of my point. This is not an anomaly. This is evidence of what's happening.
Yep.
And while Obama and the rest of them say, "Oh, everything's okay. You don't have to worry about it. It's all under control. Just keep moving. Nothing to see here, folks. Just keep moving along."
Yep.
Bunk. Where are we? Are we going to say, have we missed our time to take our commercials, Melody?
Yes, we did.
Frank, this is your fault. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Thank you.
folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Do you have a choice as to where we go now, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to make sure you get to our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We got a lot of specials going on. We have a lot of 90% silver in. It's a great time to be buying up silver. And don't let the drop in prices scare you from purchasing your gold and silver. It's all relative to everything. You need to just continue to accumulate. And, of course, it's kind of like cost averaging. If you bought a little bit higher price, you buy it at a little lower price, you're sort of cost averaging. So bringing some of those higher prices down. And so we got some great gold, some AU $5 Liberty gold pieces in. Beautiful. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
An article from Bloomberg here, which I think is fundamentally nonsensical. It's written San Francisco Federal Reserve economist Kevin Lansing. He's at least the source of the information here. And it says, according to a new study by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, some at the United States Central Bank may still be too optimistic about how high interest rates can rise in the longer run. Okay. We're dealing with this interest rate thing. They raised it 0.25% last December, and the stock market crashed in January of this year. Worst two-week decline, I think, in history. I don't know if that's exactly correct, but they had a significant decline. That's, they believe, because they raised, oh my gosh, they had the audacity to raise the interest rate by a quarter of a percent. And here we have an article that says, oh, some of the people may be too optimistic about how high interest rates can rise in the longer run. What's wrong with that is this. They are saying they're operating on the assumption that by holding interest rates down near zero, then we can find more idiots, more greater fools to go out and buy those $10 million mansions and pay $12 million for them in Aspen. Because the interest rate is so cheap, you can't pass up the deal. See, they're betting that this cheap interest rates are going to stimulate people to take out loans so they can buy more stuff and stimulate the economy. And then if we get enough people buying more stuff, it'll make the factories work harder and faster, and everybody will get ahead. That's their idea. But the problem with low interest rates is that while they are good for consumers and while they are good for borrowers, they are terrible for people who have saved any money. They're terrible for people who are producing any money, right? They're terrible for lenders. They're great for debtors. But what about the guy who's got $500,000 saved up and he'd like to lend it out and make some money? Do you think he wants to lend that money at 1.5% interest someplace? To the government, for example? In some sort of an idiot bond? That's all he gets, 1.5%? If he's worried about his retirement, he should be looking for something. Historically, the pension funds were based on the idea of getting 6, 7, 8% return on your investment every year. That's not happening now. And what this means is when we hold these interest rates down at artificially low levels, well, yeah, they're great for the consumers. Hooray! The borrowers. Hooray! The government, biggest borrower in the world. Hooray! They get to pay off their debts with lower interest rates. But they are terrible for people who've actually worked hard and been sufficiently prudent and diligent to save some money. And in the end, we need the producers and we need the savers more than we need the consumers. The government says, oh, we've got to take care of the consumer economy. And I'm saying, to heck with the consumer economy. You need to take care of the producers. They're the ones who generate enough money where some can be saved. And the government is pushing, when the Federal Reserve says they are going to hold our interest rates down next to zero, what are they doing? They're pushing capital out of this country. And it may be, it may even be, it's certainly part of the reason why we've had no real recovery over the past 8 years. They say, oh, we'll lower interest rates and that'll stimulate a recovery. No, what it will stimulate is the flight of capital from this country to some third world country, some foreign market, where they might be able to get a decent return on their money. A rich man is not going to sit around and say, well, I'll just take one for the Gipper and I'll lend my money out at next to nothing in order to keep all these idiot consumers happy. He's not going to do that. He worked hard to come up with the money that he can use that is potentially available to be loaned to people. But he expects a fair return on his money. And 1.5% is not it. And so he's going to take his money elsewhere. He's going to pull it one way or another. It's going to be pulled out of the economy. And it's undoubtedly part of the reason why we haven't had a recovery. I don't know if it's a significant part of the reason or a trivial part of the reason, but it's part of the reason. And the thing that interests me about this is when you look at it and you see what low interest rates are doing, they're driving capital out of the country. And so they're making investments in the United States less attractive. I don't mean they're stopping it. There's still foreign investments coming in. But instead of getting $1 trillion, maybe we're getting $800 billion. All right? We're doing okay, but we could have done better if we paid decent rates of interest. I don't see how the economy is going to hold together with low interest rates. It is a way of robbing people who actually save money. They produced money in the first place. And you're not going to rob these people easily. The government isn't smart enough to rob these people. Oh, they'll get some of them. I get that. But the people who understand how to make serious money in the first place are not going to be easily robbed by a bunch of yokels who work for the Internal Revenue Service or at Congress. They know how to protect their wealth. They know how to move it around. They can anticipate what's coming, and they can move it to other countries, other locations, whatever. They're hard to rob. And you need them. You don't have to kiss their backsides, but you have to have people who are productive. I'm not just talking about the 0.1%. Those people are mostly hustlers. But people that are productive, working hard. You people are working hard. What's going to happen? What is going to happen with this low interest rate? Where will you put your money where you're going to get a return on your money at 1.5% or whatever that's going to be sufficient to fund your retirement? Do you have a plan for that? Do you have a pension plan that can? Our plan only requires 1.5%, 2% return on investment. There'll still be plenty of money for your retirement. You got one like that? I don't think you do, and I don't think you're going to find one either. And I don't think you can do it with U.S. bonds. I think the whole thing, your retirement is being robbed right now by governments saying, "Oh, we're holding interest rates down so you can afford to borrow more money." You should be more interested in how much you are saving and how much you are earning from your savings than you are in how much you can borrow and how much stuff you can buy with it.
You know what, Al? If we had a currency that was backed by gold, we would need to have 8% return.
I understand that.
We would need a 10% return on our money.
Yeah.
We could deal with a dollar equals a dollar saved, a dollar earned, a dollar saved.
Mm-hmm.
That would be enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're talking about low rates, Stanley Fisher, it's funny, Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fisher, he says, hey, negative interest rates seem to be working in other countries. Well, we're not going to do it here. We're not planning on anything like that. Well, you know what? If you weren't planning on doing anything like that in the future, you wouldn't be talking about how they're working in other countries. I mean.
Yeah, I understand that.
So, you know, the situation's not there to get better. You know, we're in a world where, you know, things are just, you know, there isn't any balance to anything. But eventually, things will get balanced one way or another.
Oh, they're going to rebalance. They're going to rebalance. That's a fact.
You bet.
All right? And it's not going to be fun. A lot of people say, wait a second, I thought I could borrow forever.
And
no,
you
can't. You need to pay back now.
Account. Yes. You eventually have to balance your checking account.
Yeah. You know, it's like the Greeks in Greece. They are now living through an era of austerity. What that means is the government has raised taxes and the government is giving less benefits. And the difference between the increased tax revenue and the diminished benefits that they're providing to the public is going to pay, and in theory, it's going to pay creditors that loaned them money that caused Greece to get into deep trouble in the first place. We're going into a period of austerity. They'll call it a fan, they'll say, this is austerity, see? What it is it's the time when you pay for all the money that you borrowed. And you're going to pay for it one way or another. You're either going to pay for it by coughing up money out of your bank account, savings account, whatever, or you're going to pay for it by living in poverty and working for next to nothing, and somebody's going to be able to make some money off of your effort. You won't, but it will be payback time. And it'll be payback when you say payback's a bitch. Ha ha ha. Wait till you are called on to pay back how much you've loaned. And the same goes for me. I'm not immune from this. It's not like I'm sitting here pot calling the, you know, I'm in this just as much as everyone else is. It's not because I've borrowed much in my lifetime, because I haven't. Right? Borrowed next to nothing, as a matter of fact. But still, I am living in a society where the government admits to being $20 trillion in debt. In theory, I got some benefit out of that $20 trillion in debt, and so did you. And in theory, the people who that debt are holding the debt instruments are going to say, well, I'd like to be paid now. Sir, could I trade this piece of paper in for something that something liquid that I can spend? And when they say that, one way or another, we the people are going to be held accountable for paying that debt. Now, maybe we'll pay and maybe we won't. And in fact, I think we won't pay because we can't. It's too big for us to pay. But when it does, all that people who've trusted in this, they put their money into a pension account. Right? They've got, oh, I've got a pension fund here and I've got $500,000. Really? You got $500,000 worth of IOUs is what you've got. And if the day comes when government can't pay the debt, if those are U.S. bonds that you've got that $500,000 in, guess what? You have lost your assets. Huh? And that's where we're going. That's where we're heading. And there is a kind of mathematics and a kind of accounting that is, there's a day of reckoning coming. And there's nothing we can do to escape this. One way or another, a lot of people are going to be very badly hurt because our government has tempted us with a monetary system that allowed us to get by and seemingly prosper without having to truly pay our bills and truly pay our debts. Allowed the government to get by without paying its debts. It doesn't pay its debts right now. And all it does is issue more Federal Reserve notes. We've accepted this nonsense. We've been ignorant. We've been foolish. We have been trusting of people that we should not have trusted. Huh? And now, you know, a certain amount of the fool and his money are soon parted. We're going to see a parting of the ways. Huh? So, what do you say? None of us are innocent, certainly not me. But we're coming to a problem that cannot be evaded. I don't think anybody can look at this and say, oh, we'll get around that. No, we're not. The only thing they can say is we might not have it tomorrow or the next day, and we might be able to put it off another week, another month, another year, another who knows how long. But we're going to have the problem. And when we do, if you're not prepared with savings that can't be destroyed by monetary manipulation, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And again, that's why we tell you, put your savings, in my opinion, into gold, silver, something tangible. We're out of time, folks.
And so, I just want to say stocks are not savings.
No. I know none of it is. None of it's paper, 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 paper. Paper is not savings. Paper is something you hang on the nail in the outhouse. You understand? Gold and silver are savings. They're real money. Melody and I are out of time today. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.